I had some fun thinking of the title for this evening's presentation, No Birth or Death and No End of Birth and Death. My practice tradition is Zen, and that's just the kind of paradox we love, right? I mean, Zen is full of them. My title echoes something that's found in the Heart Sutra, which is pretty definitely the most important text, the most important sutra in Zen. Even if you haven't read it, you've likely heard some of it, because it's where that famous phrase, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, it comes from that. But the Heart Sutra also says things like, there's no ignorance and there's no end of ignorance. There's no old age and death, and there's no end of old age and death. And so the question for us this evening is, what can this possibly mean? What sense can we make of it? And I'd like to start approaching that by going back to the Buddha himself, the traditional biographies, which are pretty definitely more mythic than historical, but nonetheless, I think, very wonderful in their own way. According to these biographies, the Buddha was inspired to leave home because he encountered what are sometimes called the three or four heavenly messengers. Right? According to the myths, the Buddha lived in pleasure, surrounded by young people, and he had no awareness of suffering. But then one day his charioteer took him into the town or the village, and for the first time he saw an old man. By the way, notice the sequence, the old man first, and then later he sees someone who's ill, and then finally he sees a corpse, someone who's dead. And on his way back home, after that, he sees the fourth heavenly messenger, that is a renunciate, a monastic, or somebody who has left home on the spiritual path. And his encounter with old age, illness, and death is said to be what makes him realize he can't just enjoy life. He's going to get old. He's going to get sick. He's going to die. And so this is the existential crisis that precipitates him leaving home, going into the forest, and taking this great spiritual path. But here's the interesting thing. Supposedly, again, according to the biography, the Buddha attained his great awakening under the Bodhi tree about the age of 35. And after that, of course, he taught. Thank goodness he did. But he taught for about 45 years, traveling around Northeast India. And so what happened to him? Well, he got old. According to the Pali Canon, he had moments or times of illness, headaches, and according to the Mahaparinibbana Sutra, he had stomach aches, maybe dysentery, that eventually led to his death. So, he left home to solve the problem of old age, illness, and death, and what happened? He got old, he got sick, and he died. So how did he solve the problem? Right? Well, conventionally, right, a lot of religions, especially theistic ones, talk about the solution is something about the soul, that when the moment of death happens, there's a soul that leaves the body, and the soul, unlike the body, is eternal, and so that's somehow some kind of liberation of the soul. But for Buddhism, that doesn't work, because a very important teaching in Buddhism is the idea of no self or no soul, which is really a kind of Greek idea that was introduced into Christianity, that kind of body-soul dualism. The other solution or understanding that some of us might have, which is maybe more compatible with our modern materialistic world is more existential. The idea that the Buddha, well, he accepted his mortality. He became completely comfortable with it. He didn't deny it. And so he simply, as it were, put up with it. In a way, these are kind of two extremes. On the one hand, a kind of a spiritual escape from the material world, escape from the physical body. And the other way, just sort of existentially accepting what's going to happen to all of us. But according to the tradition, that's not what happened to the Buddha, right? According to what Buddhist teachings say, the Buddha, as a result of his awakening under the Bodhi tree, he realized something about his own true nature and the true nature of the world. Something that has been described in many different types of ways, but one of the ways that it can be described is, one of the important ways, is realizing the unborn. That is to say, the Buddha's awakening involved realizing that dimension whereby he couldn't die insofar as he was never born. And this is something that doesn't just apply to the Buddha, it applies to all of us. The point about the Buddha is that he realized his essential nature. We have the same essential nature, that there's something about our nature that is unborn and undying. And again, insofar as we realize the unborn, we can see this perspective whereby we can't die. Now, I know this is sounding difficult. Please bear with me a while here. How can we understand this? What's going on? Well, in Buddhism, there's a lot of emphasis, especially in Mahayana, on what's called the two truths, which maybe are better understood as the two perspectives, the two ways of experiencing. And the basic idea here is that our usual way of experiencing the world, in which we perceive it as a collection of self-existing, real, separate things that are born and die, or that are created and eventually are destroyed, that this is in fact not just the way the world is, but it has to do with seeing the world in a particular way. This is a way that we have learned to see the world. It's a psychological and social construct. And the idea is, if somehow through our practice we can undo this and experience not only the world, but our own essential nature as it is in itself, then we can realize this other dimension where there's no birth and there's no death. This is very important in the whole of the Buddhist tradition. Even in the earliest texts in the Pali Canon, perhaps the two most famous descriptions of nirvana, the goal of the Buddhist path, both talk about the unborn. One of them, in fact, they're both in a section called the Udana. One of them says, "There is, O monks, an unborn, unfabricated," or as I would say, unconstructed. There is an unborn and unfabricated. If there were not an unborn and an unfabricated, then there wouldn't be an escape from the born and the fabricated. But because there is an unborn and a unfabricated, there is an escape from the born and the fabricated. This is the kind of oral tradition. This is the way that they talk. But the important point here is the emphasis on the unborn from the very beginning. And there's other places within the Pali Canon as well that talk about it. This really intrigues me because very often this has been understood to refer to what happens after we die. The way that Buddhism, especially early Buddhism, is conventionally understood, right? There's this idea of karma and rebirth, right? We have karma. Because of our karma, after we die, we're going to be reborn into this world of suffering, craving, and delusion, and it's going to go on and on and on and on. But the Buddha, who's awakened, puts a stop to that. So after he dies, this last time, what's called the parinirvana, he's not going to be reborn. So that's the sense in which the Buddha becomes the unborn. That's the way that it's often been popularly understood. But I wonder if that's a kind of misunderstanding. that the point about the unborn, that the unborn here is a metaphor for something. I've been very struck by something Joseph Campbell said about religious metaphors. Quote, "Half the people in the world think that the metaphors of their religious traditions are facts. And the other half contend they're not facts at all. As a result, we have people who consider themselves believers because they accept the metaphors as facts. And we have others who classify themselves as atheists because they think the religious metaphors are lies." I mean, both are literalist. Whether you literally accept it or literally reject it, maybe you're missing the point about how spiritual language works. Maybe the unborn isn't something describing what happened to the Buddha after his last supposed lifetime, but it's a different way of experiencing the world and ourselves that's possible for us here and now. Again, this is very important in the Buddhist tradition. There's maybe especially in Mahayana. In the Mahayana tradition, probably the single most important concept of all is shunyata, the term that's usually translated as emptiness. And the synonyms most commonly used to sort of describe emptiness, things that are empty, are unborn, uncreated, and unproduced. The Heart Sutra, which I referred to at the beginning, that also says that things are not created and not annihilated. And Nagarjuna, the greatest of all the Buddhist philosophers, echoes this in the preface to his great book, the Mula Majjhimika Karikas. He prefaces his whole book by saying that things don't die and they're not born. They do not cease to be and they are not eternal. Again, these kind of paradoxes, right? So, again, what I've tried to do so far is just to sort of give you some sense of how important this is in the Buddhist tradition. But does that give us much sense of what's really being pointed at here? It still seems very conceptual, doesn't it? It almost sounds like some kind of philosophical conundrum to solve. But I'm struck that one of the great Zen texts, the Shodoka, or the Qingdao Ke in Chinese, I used to recite this sort of every week in Hawaii when I first started Zen practice. It has this great line: "Since I abruptly realize the unborn, I've had no reason for joy or sorrow at any honor or disgrace." In other words, the unborn is not just some idea, it's actually something we can realize. We can experience the world and ourselves in a different way. And the person in the Zen tradition for whom this is the most important, who made this like the core of his teaching, who talked ceaselessly about realizing the unborn, was a 17th century Japanese Zen master named Bankei, much beloved in Japan. He was a young kid who had, this is so often the biography, right? These deep existential questions that no one could answer. So eventually he left home, became a monk, and he kept looking for somebody to sort of give him the answer to his questions, couldn't find anyone. And finally his abbot said to him, "It's your desire to find someone that keeps you from your goal," right? You're always looking for someone to tell you the answer. So what did he do? He built himself a little hermitage and did zazen, that is to say, Zen meditation. And he really did zazen, right? Nearly continuously, so much so that he had festering sores, it said, on his butt and legs. And about 2 years later, after he started, malnourished and sleep-deprived, he also contracted tuberculosis, which in these days was pretty usually fatal, right? A doctor was summoned but could do nothing, and Bankei prepared to die. At which point, and now I'm going to quote from his memoir or autobiography. I felt a strange sensation in my throat. I spat against a wall. A mass of black phlegm, large as a soapberry, rolled down the side. I haven't been able to figure out how large a soapberry is. Anyway, suddenly, just at that moment, it came to me. I realized what it was that had escaped me since now. All things are perfectly resolved in the unborn. Now, that's his description, but he experienced what he described as the unborn. When you dwell in the unborn itself, he said, you're dwelling at the very wellhead of Buddhas and patriarchs. The unborn is the Buddha mind, and this mind is beyond birth and death. As he later taught, you each received one thing from your mother when you were born, the unborn Buddha mind. Nothing else. Rather than try to become a Buddha, when you just stay constantly in the unborn mind, you're a living Buddha in your everyday life at all times. There's not a moment when you're not a Buddha. Since you're always a Buddha, an unborn Buddha, there's no other Buddha in addition that you need to become. Instead of trying to become a Buddha, then, a much easier and shorter way is just to be a Buddha. But again, what does he mean by the unborn? Still, I'm trying to just sort of establish here the importance of this concept. Can we get more of a sense of what it means to say that our true nature, our essential nature, as we often say in Zen, is unborn? And here I want to try to express, to give some sense of that by quoting from the greatest of the Japanese Zen masters, Dogen Kegon, who lived in the 13th century. Starting with what is very likely my all-time favorite Zen quotation, right? Maybe my all-time favorite Buddhist quotation, right? I can't think of anyone I like more right now. And of course, it's paradoxical because it's Zen, right? You ready? Just understand that birth and death is itself nirvana. There's nothing such as birth and death to be avoided. There's nothing such as nirvana to be sought. Only when you realize this are you free from birth and death. Let me say it again. Just understand that birth and death is itself nirvana. So it's not like we're trying to reject this world in order to gain something else. Birth and death, our usual experience, is nirvana. There's nothing such as birth and death to be avoided. There's nothing such as nirvana to be sought. Only when you realize this are you free from birth and death. He says a lot more things about birth and death. Let me just read a few of them, and then I'll try to unpack it a little bit. And this kind of elaborates, or I think kind of tries to clarify the kind of paradox that he just expressed. Right? In birth, he says, there's nothing but birth. And in death, there's nothing but death. Accordingly, when birth comes, face and actualize birth. And when death comes, face and actualize death. Do not avoid them or desire them. Sort of try to cling to them. Birth is an expression, complete this moment. The act of birth, the process of birth, an expression, complete this moment, nothing lacking. Death is an expression, complete this moment. They're like winter and spring. You don't call winter the beginning of spring, nor summer the end of spring. Birth, complete expression of the whole, lacking nothing. Death, complete expression of the whole, lacking nothing. It is a mistake to suppose that birth turns into death. Birth is a phase that is an entire period of itself, with its own past and future. For this reason, in Buddha Dharma, birth is understood as no birth. Death is a phase that is an entire period of itself with its own past and future. For this reason, death is understood as no death. You got that? Let me try to unpack it a little bit as I sort of make sense out of it, okay? Three basic points. Number one, he's saying enlightenment is not other than birth and death. It's not escaping birth and death. It's, you can say, experiencing them in a different kind of non-dual way. So, and this is sort of essential to Mahayana Buddhism, he's not talking about something that transcends this world, but experiencing this world, understanding this world, including ourselves, in a different way. Understanding what's going on in this world in a different way, right? We cannot escape birth and death, yet there is liberation in, or rather as birth and death, if we realize something about their true nature. Secondly, for Dogen, birth and death are not opposites. And this is important because, of course, in daily life they are, right? Birth and death, life and death, they are obviously opposites, especially when you think in terms of life and death. We think that the one excludes the other. We think that, you know, we tend to want life and we don't want death, so we kind of cling to the one and then we kind of push away the horror of death. Even if we know we're going to die, we kind of reject it as long as we can. Dogen says, birth is nothing but birth, death is nothing but death. Face and actualize them. Do not avoid them or desire them. Something about the grasping. Don't grasp at them. And of course, even trying to avoid is a different kind of grasping. Do not grasp at one and try to evade the other. So his solution to this whole thing of life and death, birth and death, is a kind of acceptance, but it's not the kind of typical existential acceptance. Well, it's just going to happen, and we might as well make the best of it. What he's pointing to is when they are not experienced as opposites, when we're not understanding and experiencing the one in opposition to the other, then they don't hinder each other. Then we experience them in a different way. Point three, and this is the big one. This is where it all comes together. When we realize that birth and death are not opposites, then birth is no birth, and death is no death. This is the essential point. As Dogen says elsewhere, in the practice of Buddhism, the idea is to forget yourself, to let go of yourself. And in terms of birth and death, this would mean let go of the sense of a self that is born, or the sense of a self that is experiencing the dying. What happens if we completely become one with the act of birth? Completely, in fact, if you think about it, infants, newborns, that's a funny way of putting it if I'm denying birth, but newborns, right, they don't have a sense of self, right? So at that, for them, there's just this process, just this act of birth. We need to let go of the usual sense of a separate self that is doing the birthing and the dying, and instead completely become the birthing and the dying. When at the time for dying, there is nothing but just the dying, in Japan, tada, just this, neither avoiding it nor seeking it, then death is experienced as no death because there's not the sense of a self that is dying. Again, this goes back to this dualism that I pointed to at the very beginning, where our conventional way of understanding the world, which is a construct, a psychological and social construct, we experience everything, we experience the world, we use concepts and language, we divide it up in terms of these separate self-existing things that then do things, subjects and predicates. And what Dogen is pointing to here is a different way of experiencing if we're not doing that, if we completely become one with the dying. The same holds true for birth, of course, and birth as no birth is perhaps easier to understand, as I said, because a newborn has no sense of being a discrete self. A discrete being, a subject that's enduring a process. For infants, birth is no birth because there's no sense of self that's being born. But if there's no I, if there's no self that's ever born, then all there is the act or the process of birth. And if there's only the act or process of birthing, then there's really no birth, because our concept of birth, the way we think about birth, is that there's a self that is born. Our usual way of understanding birth and death is in terms of a self that then has this attribute. It's born at a certain time, and then it dies at a certain time. It's something that happens to the self. What is it? What's the experience then, if there is no self? Instead, the act of birth in itself, and in exactly the same way, death in and of itself, are each an expression complete in the moment, lacking nothing, whole. Mahayana would also emphasize empty, which is another way of making the point that there's not a self that's having this experience. The act of death in itself is an expression complete in the moment, as Dogen says, when not experienced in relation to anything else. Make any sense? I mean, these are tough concepts, I appreciate, and that's why I wanted to kind of wrestle with them, because this really goes very deep into the heart of Buddhist teachings and to the heart of Buddhist liberation. You know, the whole point here is that the liberation is, and the Buddha mind and the unborn that Bankei, for example, talks about, it's the experience of the world when there's not a separate self that is having the experience, when, as Dogen urges us to do, when we are able to forget ourselves, let go of ourselves, become one with the experience. And so what we're doing, of course, in talking about the unborn and no death, I'm talking about it primarily in the context of birth and death, because that's what we're especially afraid of. Mm-hmm. Look, we're all going to die. We know that. Truth is, most of us are pretty scared of that. And what Dogen and Bankei are pointing to is a different way of experiencing one's experiences, as it were. So that birth becomes no birth because there's no separate self that's born. And death is no death insofar as there's no self that dies. That when one completely can forget oneself and become the act. Right? Let me try to pull this together in conclusion by asking you all a koan, which is precisely about this. In fact, it's one of the most wonderful Zen koans, I think. And if you can pass the koan, then it means you understand what I've been trying to point to, okay? It's one of Tosotsu's three barriers, right? Three barriers, right? And the second one, he says, when you have realized your true nature, you can free yourself from life and death. How can you free yourself from life and death at the moment of death? How will you free yourself from life and death at the moment of death? That's a great koan, right? Let me say it again. When you've realized your true nature, you can free yourself from life and death. How can you free yourself from life and death when you're at the moment of death? How do you free yourself from life and death at that moment?